Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
It is August 6th, and August 6th is the anniversary of the 1965 signing of the Voting Rights Act. Historian Gary May has a new book out called Bending Toward Justice, The Voting Rights Act and the Transformation of American Democracy. In it, he traces the history of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 from its creation during the heyday of the civil rights era to the challenges its historic provisions face and continue to face. Recent developments have plunged the Voting Rights Act and the newest efforts to decimate it back into the headlines. It's a great pleasure to welcome Gary May to the roundtable this morning. Gary, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you aboard. Give us a sense of what the mood was on August 6th, 1965, and what the challenges and the triumphs were in the signing of this Voting Rights Act.
Well, it was a joyous day. It was one of the great moments in the Johnson presidency. Johnson later said he was more proud of passing the Voting Rights Act than of any other achievement of his presidency. There was a huge Voting Rights Act signing in Statuary Hall at the Capitol, and Johnson gave a rather moving speech about how African Americans have been brought to America in chains and in darkness, and he said, "Today we strike down the last shackle." And then he passed out a number of pens, as presidents do, and they sign legislation. And then afterwards, people went back to the White House and sat around the Oval Office. Again, one said it was almost a spiritual feeling of what had been achieved. And it was a momentous achievement. For the previous 60 years, African Americans, for the most part in the South, had been denied the right to vote, and it was a horrendous experience for them. They had to go down to the registrar's office, which was often located in the courthouse, where, as was true in Selma, a brutal sheriff named Jim Clark was ever present. They had to fill out a 3-page application, and if they made the slightest error, they would immediately be rejected. Then they had to take a very, very difficult test that probably a Harvard PhD couldn't pass. Often one of the questions was, how many bubbles is there in a bar of soap? They would also have to interpret a passage from the state Constitution that was, again, extraordinarily complicated. No one could interpret it. Then if somehow they passed all of that, in many states, not only Alabama, but the fact that they'd been able to register to vote was published in the local newspaper for everyone to see. And very often, people who had been able to register to vote were fired from their jobs for having achieved that. So this was a generation that really risked everything, their lives, their jobs, their homes, simply for the right to vote. So that day was a glorious day.
So at what point were there warning signs that this act could be in trouble legally, and there were questions brewing as to what was its intent and ultimately what it could do both positively and negatively?
Well, the challenges really began almost immediately. Some provisions of the act, such as Section 5, which required the preclearance provision, which required the covered states and jurisdictions in other states that were not totally covered, to submit to the Justice Department or a federal court in Washington any changes in voting practices. Those were temporary provisions, and so they had to be reauthorized, and they were in 1970, 1975, 1982, and 2006. And each time, in the Congress, primarily from the southern states that were covered. There were challenges. There were, you know, accusations that the act itself was unconstitutional, or the various provisions like Section 5 were unconstitutional. Although the Supreme Court in 1966 ruled that the act, the entire act, was constitutional and dealt appropriately with the problem at hand. So this has been a struggle that has, you know, gone on really since the inception of the act. So it's really no surprise that we are now, you know, kind of back, not to square one, but at least we've taken a huge step backward.
So let us talk about the step backward. The Supreme Court rules on June 25th, 2013, that Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act was unconstitutional. It is, I want to make two points. One, that in the dissent by Justice Ginsburg, your book was quoted, and your book was also used by Justice Stevens as a jumping off point for his criticism. So I'm curious as to what you make of what got us to that ruling on June 25th. And which will lead me to another question, which I'll save, but just so you know what direction I'm going in of will this always be a fight, in the sense of, you know, here we are in 1965, we're fighting about it in 2013, even if at some point this is overturned, is this always going to be a fight?
Well, quickly to answer your second question, which we can come back to in a minute, I think it will always be a fight. What got us to June 25th was the Constitution of the Supreme Court. You had the five Republican-appointed conservative justices, and on this occasion, the swing voter, Justice Anthony Kennedy, agreed with the conservatives. It was a very narrow decision. What's kind of interesting is that some people are saying, well, you know, we shouldn't despair because the court on June 25th didn't strike down Section 5, the preclearance provision, or the entire act. They just said that Section 4, which had the coverage mechanism, needed to be updated to reflect current conditions. So that left us with some alternatives. For example, and what people are now trying to do to fight, what you saw right after, within hours of the court's decision, all of the covered states now moving to enact all sorts of voter suppression legislation. What the Justice Department is trying to do is to use one of the provisions that the court did not mention, and that is Section 3, where a state could be, they call it the bail-in provision. A state could come under preclearance if it had indicated an intent to discriminate. But while that may sound promising, a promising tool, it's very difficult because litigation is often long and very expensive, and I don't think there's any substitute for the Congress, revising Section 4 or even building on Section 3. Now, as to your second question, you know, there are two things here. One, in 2009, a Texas utility district challenged Section 5, and it came to the court at that time, and they really kind of punted at that point. They didn't come out with a major ruling, and the Chief Justice, in his view, stated that America had changed, that we really didn't need the Voting Rights Act anymore, and he warned the Congress at that point in 2006 to revise the coverage formula to make it reflect again current conditions. So there was a bit of a warning there, and the Congress did not, in 2006, do anything to revise that section. In a larger sense, though, Joe, this is the experience of African Americans when it comes to voting in America. At first, of course, they couldn't vote at all because they had no rights as citizens. They were property. Then we have Reconstruction and 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, particularly the 15th, which stated that, you know, no state or federal or the federal government could prohibit the right to vote of a citizen on the basis of race, color, or condition of previous servitude. Reconstruction, blacks voted enthusiastically. Many held local government positions. Some were sent to the U.S. Congress. There were two United States senators who were African Americans. Sadly, Reconstruction ended, and the old Southern regimes regained power. And the first thing they did was to enact voter suppression efforts, preventing African Americans to vote. And what my book, really what the heart of my book is the stories of the untold people who fought and in some cases died for the right to vote. So it's not merely, the book's not really a kind of dreary legal history. It is more a people's history. And that's why I'm encouraged, ultimately, because, well, you know, the story of African Americans voting is, you know, two steps forward, one step back, and may continue to be so. I'm optimistic because anyone who reads in the book the stories of these people and what they did and the sacrifices they made comes away transformed. You become encouraged that having done this once, we can do it again.
The new book is Bending Toward Justice, The Voting Rights Act and the Transformation of American Democracy. It is an incredible volume and bringing up so many important points, and certainly something that is very much with us and will be for some time. Gary May, a pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.